Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on poison drops in the federal Senate right after this. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway? And how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, our Fourth Amendment protects us from and in our person, houses, papers, and effects, but it does not protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? You bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, it's knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information it is that you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? You know, that's the place to start. It's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining. It's informational. It's educational. And best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there off your computer. That's georgegordon.org. Poison Drops. Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. It's a book written in 1886. It's a book written by a fellow named Zach Montgomery, and he said in 1886 that public school fosters crime. If you want to turn your child into a criminal, send him to public school. Now, we all know that's true. We know it's true. The Messiah told us you will know them by their fruit. So you take a look at these school shootings in the public schools. You don't see that in the parochial schools, and you don't see it in homeschools, but you see it in public. What is it about public school that fosters this kind of violent crime? What is it about public school that is different from parochial school that would foster criminals, paupers, insane, insanity, suicides, and violent criminals in unemployment? All of which come from public schools, and you don't find that coming out of private schools or homeschools. Now, this book was written in 1886, so when this guy made this observation, clear back in 1886, writing from San Francisco, California, it was wild and off the wall. Nobody today would believe such a report, which is why I thought I would make it. Today, it's been documented and demonstrated by our Supreme Court. Let me tell you a little story here about crime, unemployment, and welfare as it relates to people here in the United States today who attend public school and those that don't. People who do not attend public school are more likely to be employed than unemployed. People who do not attend public school are less likely to commit suicide. People who do not go to public school are less likely to end up insane. And people who do not go to public school are less likely to become either criminals or violent criminals. Less likely. And it's not just a little bit less likely, it's like 6-1. Let me put it to you this way. Send a kid to public school as opposed to educating that child at home, and he's 6 times more likely to end up in prison. If you send a child to public school here in the United States of America, he will be twice as likely to end up on welfare. If you send a child to public school, he is twice as likely to end up insane or in an institution. If you send a child to public school here in the United States, he is four times more likely to commit suicide than a child that has not attended public school. If you send a child to public school and you take a look at Columbine, the vicious attacks, not just a guy stealing a car or stealing something, which is common crime, but I mean a violent crime. I was watching America's Most Wanted last night, and Jack Welch put on a story there about 1991. Four guys walked into an ice cream store, and there were four young girls in there, and these guys raped the girls and then killed each one of them, shot and killed each one of them, shot them in the head. Just one shot to the head, just killed these four girls. That's the kind of violent, outrageous crime that occurs here in the United States that is just practically unheard of in places like Japan. I mean, you know, they've got some crime in Japan, but my God, they don't do things like that. They've got public school in Japan, but there's something different about the public school in Japan than here in the United States. Something's a little different. Now, when I make this statement, you say to yourself, why, this can't be true. This has got to be preposterous poppycock. We all know that the children are the future of America, and we have to send these children to school, and we spend $500 billion a year on our public schools here in this country. And furthermore, when these children attend public school here in the United States, they consume about $10,700 per student per year on average in the public school system. That's right, $10,700. Now, the average Joe Sixpack, you know, when he hears this, says, well, that sounds reasonable. Well, if you compare that to every other country in the world, there's 209 countries in the world, we spend more on education than anybody else in the world. More. Nobody else spends that kind of money. And we get not the poorest result. I mean, we're not down, you know, at number 209, but we're down around number 50. When you compare America with 50 other countries in the world, they score higher than our students. Now, if money were the solution to the educational divide, then America should be the smartest people in the world. I mean, our people should just really be right up there. I was watching Saturday Night Live last night, and they had a story on there, and this lady was being interviewed, you know, in a skit, and the question came up, well, what is the capital of, Budapest is the capital of what country? That was the question, and the lady didn't know that it was Hungary. Now, that kind of spoof, you know, is kind of funny. We say, oh, my God, how can anybody be that dumb? Well, that's common. That's common in this country. The Japanese came over here in the 1980s and did a complete study of the United States. It took them 2 years. They went from coast to coast and border to border, and they studied our public school system. And they issued a communique when they got through, and they said, we haven't found anything in America that is worth emulating in Japan. They couldn't find one thing about the public school system here in America that they would want to take back to Japan. That tells you a little something. But let's go back in time here to 1886. Let me give you a little background here. This guy's name is Zach Montgomery. And in 1884, there was an election. And a fellow named Grover Cleveland won the election. He was a Democrat. First Democrat since James Buchanan to hold the White House in 1856, James Buchanan, and then Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, in 1860. The Republicans held the White House until the election of 1884. So in 1885, when this guy, Grover Cleveland, takes office, he appointed this guy, Zach Montgomery, as the Under the under attorney general, the assistant attorney general, they call it. The assistant attorney general. So Montgomery has to be confirmed by the Senate. So he goes into the Senate. Now the Republicans are going to, you know, they're going to ask him some pretty hard questions. And so one of the questions they ask him, what do you think of our public school system? He said it sucks. Well, he didn't use those words, but, you know, the equivalent to it, you know. And the senators were just outraged. They said, what? What? You don't believe in our public school system? So, oh, no. Now, this public school system, it causes crime, poverty, insanity, suicide, violent crime, and unemployment. And I think it ought to be reformed, if it ought not to be just plain abolished. And so the final analysis was they wouldn't confirm him. And so there he is, you know, he's embarrassed now, you know, like Judge Robert Bork, you know, was nominated for Supreme Court justice, and then they rejected his nomination, you know, because of his political or his philosophical views. And so anyway, after he had been rejected, people started asking him, well, why is it that you're making this claim that public school causes crime, poverty, insanity, suicide, violent criminals, and unemployment? And he said, well, because the census statistics prove it. So he went to the census statistics from 1850, 1860, 1870, and 1880. That's four census. And he said, look here. You take a look at the amount of money being spent on public school versus homeschool, and look at the states that practice parental education versus public education. And the statistics prove my point. And so people said, you know, his friends and relatives and so on, they said, well, why don't you write a book? And so he said, okay, I will. So he wrote a little book. It's not very big. How many pages? About 135 pages, 138 pages. You'll probably have a hard time finding it. It's called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery, The School Question from a Parental and Non-Sectarian Standpoint. He addresses it, The School Question, Parental and Non-Sectarian Standpoint, by Zach Montgomery. Now, it's reprinted by the St. Thomas Press. I'll give you the name and address. St. Thomas Press. Post Office Box 35096. If it's still good, I'm not sure it is, but I'll give it to you anyway. Houston, Texas, and the number is, their zip code is 77235. First printing was 1968, second printing 1983 by St. Thomas Press. It was originally published by Gibson Brothers Printers and Bookbinders in 1886. The information is compiled by the author in the United States Census reports from his own writing. 1886 and reprinted in 1968, 1983. Again, that's St. Thomas Press, P.O. Box 35096, Houston, Texas 77235. Now, if you can't find it there, you might find a copy in a used bookstore. Remember, the modality for doing that is go to a used bookstore, give them the name of the book and the author, and they'll plug it into their computer, and it goes around worldwide. Now, there's another little thing over here you can go to. It's called Brave New Bookstore. Remember that? Brave New Bookstore in Austin, Texas. They handle all these crazy, off-the-wall, right-wing radical books. And their phone number is 512-480-2503. If you can get that down, try it again. It's 512-480-2503. They're located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B in Austin, Texas. 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas. The zip code down there is 78705. Now, you can get them also online. It's bravenewbookstore.com, bravenewbookstore.com. Remember, you're looking for Poison Drops in the Federal Senate, written by Zach Montgomery. Now, in 1972, the story here, as it relates to a public school, was demonstrated and proved in a case called Yoder versus Wisconsin. So let me start there with Yoder versus Wisconsin, tell you the story, and then we'll refer back and forth between the two, and I'll show you the parallels between 1886 and this guy, Zach Montgomery, who said, here's what's going to happen. Here's what's happening between 1850 and 1880. Here's what's going to continue to go on. And then what actually happened and was demonstrated by our Supreme Court in Yoder versus Wisconsin in 1972 in modern times, after we had done this public school trick over here for about 100 years, you know. Then what was the results? The guy's name is Jonas Yoder, Y-O-D-E-R. He's an Amish guy, lives in Wisconsin. And Yoder has his children in the local Amish school, where the Amish educate their children to the eighth grade, and then he jerked his kids out of the eighth grade and put them to work on the farm, and they were out there bucking bales or hauling hay and feeding horses and one thing and another. And the state of Wisconsin said, no, wait a minute, you can't do that. We have a compulsory education law, and every kid has to be educated to at least the 10th grade, that's age 16, in public education. Now, the Amish avoid public education by, you know, certifying their own teachers and having their own teachers teach their children in their own Amish schools, so that the Amish children are never put into the general public population, because they don't want their children polluted by the affairs of the world. And so, you know, Catholic people do that. They send their children to Catholic school, and Baptists do that, and Lutherans do that. They send their children to their local Baptist because they want their children to be raised and educated outside of the peer pressure, you know, of the society at large. And it works very well for the Amish. They've been doing this now for several hundred years, and they have successfully withstood the pressures of modern society. They've rejected it, and they live their own lives and their own lifestyle, make their own clothes. They have their own schools, have their own farms, and they do their own thing. And they don't have social security numbers, and don't practice insurance, and they don't buy automobiles, and they don't drive with driver's licenses, you know, things like that. Well, they don't drive at all, with or without a driver's license, but moral of the story is they've got their own lifestyle. Now, most of us would look at that and say, well, those guys are radical. Well, that's true. That is pretty radical. But they're also pretty moral, and they don't have any unemployment, violent criminals, suicide's very rare, insanity's very rare, they don't have any paupers, and they don't have any criminals. Well, I wouldn't say they don't have any criminals. They don't have very many criminals, and violent crime is just unheard of. They're just not not trained that way, not raised that way. Now, there's something different about these Amish people, and this guy Yoder, when he went into trial, went in, defended, and he was found guilty because he'd taken his children out of the public schools, and he was fined $5. The judge was pretty lenient, and he said, well, I find you guilty, but I'm going to fine you $5. Let you go. But you see, even if you paid the $5 fine, which Yoder wouldn't pay, he didn't pay the $5 fine, he appealed, and he took the case clear up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court looked at this, and they said, well, wait a minute. There's something about this that needs to be reviewed. And so the Supreme Court reviewed the story, and so I'm not going to read you the whole case here. I just want to read some excerpts from it. But there's a footnote over here, as I can find it, and it says something like this. It says, Wisconsin concedes that under the religion clauses, religious beliefs are absolutely free from the state's control. But the state argues that actions, even though religiously grounded, are outside the protection of the First Amendment. But our decisions have rejected the idea that religiously grounded conduct is always outside the protection of the free exercise clause. Now, I've heard that many times from AGs, you know, prosecuting attorneys. Why, you can't use religious free exercise here. This is not part and parcel with the program. And it's not true. Public officials, especially prosecuting attorneys, will all oftentimes, in their defense of statutes and state practices, tell you you can't do that. But up here on my wall on the right is the U.S. Supreme Court reports. It dates back to about 1794. And there are literally thousands of cases in there where government officials have made mistakes when they said, you can't do that. And then the Supreme Court comes back and says, oh, yeah, you can. And this is one of those examples, you know. Many people are afraid to take their children out of public school because they're afraid that social aid is going to take them, you know, and that happens all the time. I don't deny it. But there's three ways to educate your children in this country. You can send them to public school, which is what everybody wants you to do, and then you can send them to private school, which not very many people want to do, and then you can educate them at home, which more and more people are deciding to do. Three modalities, all provided for in our Constitution, all provided for in our state statutes. All 50 states make provision for these three ways. Now, get this. God Almighty Himself requires that all parents educate their children. Compulsory education did not spring up with the Roosevelt administration in 1937, which is when the feds came up with their Compulsory Education Act. No. God Himself at Mount Sinai required that all of us educate our children. And He required that everyone have a legal education, not a liberal arts education, not a technical education, but a legal education. He wanted everybody in the country to be a lawyer, a requirement. Every man, woman, and child in the society should be a competent, qualified lawyer. That came from the Creator. Six statutes on education. Now, if after we've trained you in the law, you want to become a doctor, a dentist, or a chiropractor, or you want to go into some other field, or you know, you want politics or something, that's fine. But everybody has a requirement. Now, we said, no, we are not going to give our children a legal education. We're going to give them a liberal arts education. We're going to give them a technical education. We're going to educate them to anything but law. And so that's what we have decided. That's what we have done. And then we've created institutions, you know, like governments, to give us a different set of law than the Scripture. And that's why we have a public school system over here, is because we rejected this God-ordained education program that we got from Mount Sinai. And it's not just us here in America. I mean, you Canadians and Australians, you've done it too. All the Western European countries, indeed all the countries around the world, have adopted this public education format. In fact, the public education format goes back to Babylon. It's Babylonian. It's designed to give the king control over the minds of the people. It's a program for mind control, people control. That's to get everybody, and it works like a shot. See, when you went to the first grade, remember the first thing they taught you? Place your hand over your heart, and then turn to the flag, and you look at the flag, and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States. And you people in France do the same thing, and you people in Japan do the same thing, and you people, you know, all around the world, everybody in the world does the same thing. We pledge allegiance to the flag of our countries. Nobody ever pledges allegiance to God or the Creator or anything like that. So, in so doing, it focuses our mind on Germany or Russia. And then when those countries, the politicians, say, okay, now we need to go to war against this neighboring country over here. And those people all rally around their flags, and they jump up and down and hoot and holler, and they get excited and stir up a lot of dust and hate and discontent and go out and kill each other. Then one side or the other wins, and then the other side's sad, and you know, and then some more time goes by, and they try it again and again and again. And all of these people are trained to do this in their public schools. And so here in America, you know, when 9/11 occurred, you know, our people, they just jumped up and down and said, I mean, we just can't go to war fast enough. You know, we got to get out there and avenge our fellow Americans. And so we're out here just killing people right and left. Now, the terrorists killed 3,000 people there in New York. We went over to Iraq and killed 1 million Iraqis. And the Iraqis didn't even attack us. It was the Saudis. All those guys, you know, that were in those airplanes, they were Saudis. They weren't Iraqis. So you got to ask yourself, well, let's see, now, if we were attacked by Japan on December 7th, 1941, remember that? The sneak attack on Pearl Harbor? Then would we then go to war against Brazil? Would it make any sense to you? We're attacked by Japan, so we go to war with Brazil. What sense does that make? Fortunately, we went to war against Japan because they're the guys that attacked us, but the Iraqis didn't attack us. It was the Saudis. And you couldn't very well go to war against the Saudis because they were our buddies and our friends. I mean, you know, that's the way life is. And besides that, we already had their oil. And we didn't have the oil of the Iraqis, and they had 25% of the oil in the world. So there you go. All right, now let's get back over here to Yoder. Now, Yoder goes up to the Supreme Court, and the state of Wisconsin comes into the Supreme Court, and they said, we have to educate children in the public school system to prevent crime, to prevent pauperism, that is, welfareism, and unemployment. That's exactly what the state said. They walked right in there, and there's a footnote in here. It says, the record of this case establishes without contradiction that the Greene County Amish had never been known to commit crimes, that none had been known to receive public assistance, and that none were unemployed. And now listen to this. The state comes in and says, if we don't educate these Amish kids until they're 16 in the public schools, they're gonna become criminals, they'll end up on welfare, and they'll become unemployed. So here's what happened. This is quite a little story. The Supreme Court then backed off, and they said, listen, let's take a look at the results. The state comes in and says, if you don't educate these Amish kids until they're 16 in public school, they're going to end up on crime. So they went out to the prisons of Wisconsin, and they looked in every prison. They looked in every county jail, and they were looking for Amish prisoners. They're looking for Amish criminals. And guess what? In the entire state of Wisconsin, there wasn't a single Amish guy locked up in jail. Not a one. Now, there's not a whole bunch of Amish people to start with. So to be fair, you know, to be fair about this, let's suppose that the state of Wisconsin has 1 million people. And 1% of them are criminals. And so you got 1% of 1 million people that are locked up in the jails. And let's suppose, just for the sake of our example, that there's 1,000 Amish people that live in Wisconsin. Out of that 1 million, 1,000 of them are Amish. Then we would expect 1% of the Amish to be locked up in jail, which would be about 10 people, wouldn't it? Well, they looked through the jails and they couldn't even find 1%. So the Amish are so law-abiding that you don't find any Amish people in jail. So the question then has to be reversed to the other side and says, well, of all of the people who are in fact locked up in the jails and prisons of Wisconsin, how many of those went to public school? And the answer was all of them. So every single prisoner in the jail system of Wisconsin had been educated in the public school system. And then the state comes in and says, we're trying to prevent crime, and that's why we have education. And we're sending these people to public school so that they will not become criminals. Now, we take a look at the number of people that are in jail. I don't know how many are in jail, but let's say, you know, 10,000 people in Wisconsin are in prison or in jail at any given time. And all 10,000 of them have been educated in public school. Now, we come over here to the Amish. Not a one of them have attended public school. And none of them are in jail. Now, what does that tell you? Does it tell you that public school prevents crime? Zach Montgomery in 1886 says, no, just exactly the opposite is the case. Public school causes crime. Now, we haven't got to that level. We're coming to that. Just be patient with me, and I'll show you how that works. But just the Supreme Court itself, in 1972, which, you know, 40 years ago, but, you know, relatively recently, you know, a whole lot more recent than 1886. Now, Zach Montgomery made these very same claims. He said, now, public school causes crime. they actually get a statistic in here. In 1886, they went over to San Quentin Prison, and they asked the question, how many illiterate prisoners do you have in here? I think they had about 1,000 prisoners in jail, and about 25 of them were illiterate. 25 illiterates. And then the other 975 all went to public school. And then he said, there's my case right there. Of the prisoners that are locked up in San Quentin, how many of them have been to public school? And the answer was all of them. And the proportion of illiterates committing crime, or uneducated people committing crime, and those that are educated. Now, does that mean that education causes crime? No. But there's a difference between education and education. And that's what Zach Montgomery pointed out. He said, you know, you've got a proper education and you got a violent or a vile education. And the public school system here in America has been taken over by the elements that promote vile education. And as a result of that, you have vile students. And then they go out and commit crime. And they're less able to assimilate into society. Now, the Supreme Court did the same thing here with the state on this issue of welfare. The state says, every state in the union now says, we have to send children to public school so that they won't end up on the welfare rolls. Okay. So they went out over the welfare rolls of Wisconsin, went to every county, went to every social aid, said, well, how many Amish people have you got on welfare here? And they looked and they looked and they looked all over the state, high and low, under every rock. They couldn't find a single person, not a single Amish person, on welfare in the entire state, which makes all the sense in the world. See, the Amish have their own welfare system within their own community. They take care of their own, which is precisely what the Bible tells us to do. Families take care of families, and Amish families take care of Amish families. And if for some reason the Amish family can't take care of their responsibility, well, then they've got a church. And they've got other Amish people in the neighborhood. But they couldn't find any Amish on welfare. So they went to all of the welfare people that were on welfare in Wisconsin and asked the question, well, of you people that are on welfare, how many of you people went to public school? And the answer was all of them. Everyone. Without exception. Everyone on welfare had been to public school. The third issue that they raised here at the Supreme Court was, well, the state comes in and says, if we don't educate these children in public school, they're going to end up unemployed. They won't be able to find a job. They won't be qualified to work. So they went around the state and they said, okay, well, how many Amish people are on unemployment insurance? They went around and they said, how many of you Amish people are unemployed looking for work? How many of you would like to get a job down here at the shipyard or over here at the lumber mill or at Home Depot or someplace? And they couldn't find a single Amish person who was unemployed. The Amish people are all employed. They all work. They all work, and they work hard, and they're good workers. And everybody that hires them, I've never talked to anybody that ever hired an Amish guy that had a bad word about him. I've hired them here. I never had a bad word about an Amish guy. They come in, they do the work, and take their money, and they go home, and they're civil. And you just can't beat them. And so then they went out to all the people that are unemployed in Wisconsin. They said, well, now let's see, you're unemployed. Have you been to public school? And the answer was yes. Every single person that was unemployed on the unemployment roll or looking for work was, in fact, educated in public school. So the Supreme Court came back in the Yoder case and they said, well, Wisconsin has failed to make their case against the Amish. And that is, it appears that all of the social objectives that the state is seeking to achieve, that is, crime-free, full employment, and no welfare, has been achieved by the Amish. Whatever it is these Amish guys are doing, they have achieved every social goal that the state of Wisconsin seeks to achieve, and the state of Wisconsin has not achieved any of its social goals. It is a total failure. They have not eradicated crime. They have not eradicated unemployment, and they have not eradicated the welfare. But the Amish have. And the Amish don't go to public school. And when I started this dialogue, I said, public school causes crime, unemployment, violent criminals, suicide, insane, and welfare. Stick around, and we'll talk about it some more right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Go to our archives page and then download that free general law CD package. The sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour and editorial review. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate, written by Zach Montgomery back in 1886. Point of the book is public school causes crime, welfare, insanity, suicide, violent criminals, and unemployment. Now, Montgomery went to the census information from 1850, 1860, 1870, and 1880. He had 40 years of material there, taken by the government census takers. You know, they come around asking you questions. And they keep records and books and on state activities like how many children are in public school. If you wanted to know how many children are being educated in public school today, it's over 50 million. How many people are in parochial schools? About 5 million. About how many people are involved in homeschool? And the answer is about 3 million. So you have about 58 million, rounded off, about 60 million Americans are engaged in the education process today. Children, you're going to school at some level. Now, the state and states are by far, in a way, the biggest purveyor of this thing called education. And it costs about $500 billion a year here in the United States. $500 billion. Now, there are some industries in this country that are about that big. For instance, the defense industry in this country is around $750 billion a year. And then we have the medical industry in this country. It's about $1.7 trillion a year. And then we have education, which is about $500 billion. That's a half a trillion dollars a year. And there's complaints everywhere. You know, Johnny can't read, and the state of Florida turns out 3,000 illiterates every year, and you know, from their educational system that can't read their diplomas and things like that. Johnny can't do arithmetic. We're about 50 on the scale around the world, you know, of educational excellence. And the question arises, well, why is that? Well, when I went to school, we didn't have that problem. We didn't have the violence in those days, and we were turning out criminals, all right. But it wasn't as bad as. Now, in the 1950s, it was bad. Compared to 1886, it was probably really terrible. But compared to today, public school in the 1950s was really a cakewalk. It has been degenerating. It has been degenerating for more than 150 years. It's getting worse and worse. It's not getting better. And the attempts to revive or to reform public education in New Orleans and Washington, D.C., is like trying to reform a whore in a whorehouse. I mean, you can go down there to the whorehouse and you can preach to the whores and tell them the evils of whoredoms and the risks that they run from VD and so on, but, you know, trying to reform whores in a whorehouse, I think, is a day late and a dollar short. Wouldn't we be better off if we started with our girls when they're 3, 4, 5 years old and taught them morality? You know, things like the Ten Commandments and thou shalt not commit adultery and things like that. I know it's a wild new concept, but I just thought I'd throw it out there to you. I think you'll get more success that you can create more virgins from 4-year-olds than you can 40-year-old prostitutes. Now, you know, it's just my personal opinion, but you know, give it a shot if you think you can reform a whore, get after. Now, Zach Montgomery came to a conclusion as it relates to money that's being expended for public education. So let's take a look at that for a second, because in America, when we have a problem, we need to throw more money at it. And so if you've got children that can't read, if you've got some problem in your public school, if we're behind, you know, in math or something like that, our public officials tell us, well, see, now the reason for that is we're not spending enough money. If we just spend more money, you know, that problem will go away. So let me give you the numbers here, and I'll show you how this works. In our public school system in America, we're spending $500 billion a year, about $10,700 per student per year on average nationwide. Some schools a little more, some a little less. Now, as we spend this money on these children over here, our academic and scholastic achievement records are getting lower and lower. You know, some years they go up, and then they level off, and they go back down. And then when they go back down, they hit lows that we've never seen before. You know, they get lower and lower. So over the long haul, our children are getting dumber and dumber. In fact, Charlotte Isherby wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She was with the Department of Education in the Reagan administration. And she said, this public school system over here really sucks, and let me expose what's going on here. That book now is called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, and then the lady's name is Charlotte Isherby. It's a pretty good-sized book, and written in modern times, probably about 1999 or 2000, something like that. It's been out for a few years, but it's well worth reading, you know, if you want to take a look here and find out what's wrong with public education. That woman just plain tells you. Let me explain it to you. But my point is that the problems in public education today aren't something new. It isn't something that just developed. It's getting worse and worse as time progresses along. But it's been around here, you know, for 150 years. And it was first revealed by this guy, Zach Montgomery, in 1886. Now, everybody thought he was a kook and a quack and a nut and dismissed what he had to say until it was actually documented here by the Supreme Court in 1972 in Yoder, which I just told you. I said, look, the Amish people don't send their children to public school. They're not illiterate. They're not ignorant people. I want to point out to you that some of the most successful people in the world have not been to college. You know, Bill Gates, the richest man in the world, did not get a college degree. Henry Ford, who was one of the richest men in the world at his time, only went to the sixth grade. And Thomas Edison, who held 1,200 patents, only went to the third grade. So the idea that you have to go to college to be successful is poppycock. Just total poppycock. Now, we believe it, because that's what we're constantly being told, and I don't deny that. I would readily concede that the majority of people, if you ask them, is college an absolute requisite or necessity to success. You know, here in America, 99% of people, absolutely, no doubt in my mind. I just wanted to tell you that's nonsense. It ain't true. And it doesn't make any difference how many people believe it. It ain't so. Now, taking a look again at expenditures over here, Zach Montgomery noted this. The more money that you spend on public education, the worse the problem becomes. And that's precisely what we see today. The more money that we spend on public education, the worse the problem becomes. Let me give you a couple of illustrations here. Modern times. If you take a look at scholastic abilities, scholastic tests, No Child Left Behind. Remember the Republicans and Bush, you know, they said they've got to have this new education bill here, see? And so they put through this program, and they said, we're going to spend more money, we're going to take more time, effort, and energy, and we're going to test more kids, and we're going to find out how smart these kids are. And so they've been doing that. Now, here's what's going on. When we compare the three school systems, that is homeschool, parochial school, and public school, and the amount of money that's being spent to educate children, here's the results. If you educate a child in public school here in the United States, on average, he will score at the 50th percentile. And my boy just explained that to me. He says, here's what that means, 50th percentile. That means that of all the kids that are being tested, half of them score above and half of them score below that 50. So if you score at the 50th percentile, that means that half of the students are smarter than you are and half of them are dumber than you are. You're right in the middle. About a C average. I said, well, that's pretty good. Now, if you educate a child in the inner city public schools of America, like Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, or New Orleans, on average, they will score at the 28th percentile. So if you're, on average, in a public school in one of these inner cities, that means that 72 kids will be dumber than you, and 28 of them or 27 of them will be smarter than you. You're at the 28th percentile. So here you are, you're getting dumber and dumber if you are in an inner city public school, it doesn't cost $10,700. It costs $14,000, $18,000, or $22,000 to educate a kid to the 28th percentile. But it only costs $10,700 on average to educate that same kid to the 50th percentile. That's in the better public schools. Now, let's compare that with the parochial school. So you take these kids and you put them in parochial school, and those children, they score on average at the 80th percentile. So the kid, he's at a level where there's only 20 other kids over here that score higher than he does. You know, he's at the 80th percentile. Now, when we compare that to homeschool, they score at the 86th percentile. All right, now here's the amount of money you're spending. On average in public school, $10,700. On average in parochial school, about $2,500. And on average in homeschool, about $550. Now, get this. If you spend $550, educate a kid in a homeschool, he'll score at the 86th percentile on average. That's the highest. And the least expensive education. So the less money you spend, the better the kid comes out. Parochial school is second, 80th percentile, $2,500. Costs you about five times as much to get a dumber kid. And then if you educate this kid at the public school level, let's see, that's 21. You spend 21 times as much money, and you'll get a kid that's at the 50th percentile. And if you spend $22,000, you can get him down to the 28th percentile. And what do our politicians tell us? Every time you want a smarter kid, you got to spend more money. You got to hire more teachers, smaller classes, and spend more money. But the statistics tell you exactly the opposite. And these numbers come from the Department of Education. Hell, I didn't dream this up. You know, I'm not smart enough to come up with these numbers now. I got to rely upon government. And if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? Huh? Now, that's precisely what this guy, Zach Montgomery, discovered back in 1886. He took a look at the amount of money that was being spent. Let me give you an illustration. Here's New York State. In 1850, the state of New York had a native-born population of 2.5 million. New York then had, all told, 700,000 students at an annual cost of $3.34 per pupil per year. And at that time, our native-born criminals numbered 649, or one native-born criminal, for every 3,754 native inhabitants. But with the laudable purpose of lessening the tendency of her people to commit crime, the state government went on year by year increasing the burdens of taxation for public school purposes until in 1880, the receipts for education and the expenditures being made totaled $10.78 for every student that entered her schools at any time during the year. And the result was that with a native population of 3.8 million, she had 5,000 native white criminals in prison, being one to every 741 people instead of one to every 3,754 as it was in 1850. So that is to say, having increased her expenditures for anti-parental and godless schools a little more than 300% in order to decrease crime, she was rewarded by an increase in crime of the tune of 500%. All right, now here's the exact same statistic between 1850 and 1880 from the Department of Census that Zach Montgomery is reporting here. He said, now the more money that you spend on public school, then the worse the results are going to come. Now remember, we're talking about six areas here. We're talking about crime, welfare, insanity, suicide, violent crime, and unemployment. And in every one of those six areas, the more money you spend on public school, then the worse the problem will become. It was true in 1850, 1860, 1870, 1880, 1972, and it's true today. If you want to increase crime in America, you need to increase expenditures on public education. If you want to increase welfare, then increase spending on public school. If you want to increase insanity, spend more money on public school. If you want to increase suicide, spend more money on public school. If you want to increase violent crime, spend more money on public school. If you want to increase unemployment, spend more money on public school. It's a proven winner. It has never failed. The more money you spend on public school, the more crime, welfare, insanity, suicide, violent crime, and unemployment you're going to get. Guaranteed. It's never failed. And it is not failing today. Now, you may be saying, well, we want less crime, less welfare, less insanity, less suicide, less violent crime, and less unemployment. And then right away you say, well, what we need to do is spend more money on public school, which is the cause of the problem. Now, when I went to public school back in the 1950s, they were just starting to promote this thing of college. Now, college had been around for a long time. None of our founding fathers, not a single one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence or our Constitution, ever spent a day in public school. All of those people were educated at home school and parochial school in what they call the parental model. Parental model. This thing of public school in this country isn't in our Constitution. It was added on later. It isn't something that our founding fathers set up and said, hey, wait a minute, we got to have public school. We got to have more educated people. If we don't have that at our federal level over here, where our kids are going to end up being criminals and poor and insane and suicidal and unemployed and so on. That's not the case, as demonstrated by the Amish. There's another little factoid that we ought to take into consideration. We ought to test everything. In the scripture, there's a statement in there called the Bereans. And the Bereans, they went to the scriptures. They searched the scriptures daily to see whether these things were true. They didn't just accept what they were being told or propagandized by Paul or Peter or James or John or somebody else. They said, well, let's look this up and see. And that's what I try to tell my students here at the law school. You know, when they come in here, I say, now listen, you don't want to believe me. I'm not worthy of belief. And what you want to do is listen to what I have to say and then go out and prove whether or not what I'm telling you is true. And then you'll know. Now, the evidence, the information is there. It's put out by the census departments, put out by the Department of Education. There's no shortage of information out there. You can get it right online. I mean, you don't have to leave your home. You can get it right there on Google. You can Google it up. You can get it from the Department of Education. And what I'd suggest is that you look back in history here. This book is valuable because it's historical. It's a historical treatise. It tells us, hell, this isn't something that just came up in the Clinton administration or George Bush, you know, or Barack Obama. Hell, this has been going on for 150 years here. And it's been going on because there are people that want public school. Public school is very profitable. Of the $500 billion a year that we're spending on public school, two-thirds of that goes to administration. And the first thing that these school administrators do when there's a shortage in the budget is that they cut the teachers and they cut the educational budget, but they don't cut the administrators. Now, think about that for a minute. This came out of New York City. Some numbers that I picked up some years back. Of the total amount of money being spent in New York City, 67% of it is spent on administration. Only 33 cents out of every dollar is spent for textbooks, buildings, and teacher salaries. The rest of it goes to pay for principals and administrators that are in the Department of Education and so on, and studies and all kinds of things, and office buildings and things to administer the school system. In other words, it's like Chrysler Corporation, just inundated with overhead. They've got vice presidents and vice presidents of vice presidents and vice presidents of vice presidents of vice presidents until you've got such a bureaucracy here that, well, who's actually building cars? We don't know who's building any cars out there on the floor, but we got a lot of vice presidents in charge of production. Now, in business, what we need are actual producers. Now, if you were spending two-thirds of your budget here on teaching, that would be another thing. You're not. You're spending two-thirds of your budget on administration and one-third on teaching. And when there's a budget crisis, the first thing they do is they cut the teachers, they cut the textbooks, they cut the buildings, they cut the school buses, they cut the production. They don't cut the administrative overhead and the bloat and the fat that goes with it. Now, that's where that's at. So public school is immensely profitable. It's like the defense industry is immensely profitable for those people that are strategically positioned in those industries, in those businesses. And so that's why you have what you have. Hey, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, we're about out of time. I'll have to leave it right there. We'll take it up here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about poison drops in the federal Senate. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.